The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for August 5th, 2017. Happy August, everyone. When I was getting ready for this week's podcast and radio broadcast, the Tour of Utah was still underway. As one of the premier stage events in the U.S., it's really nice to see such high-quality racing here at home. There was a heartfelt tribute to Sean Whitey by his BMC comrades, and as of this writing, BMC was in first place, albeit by only 43 seconds over Rally. It's been another week of horrible bike crashes, but there was one semi-bright spot when a two-time felon, Alexis DeRice, was convicted and sentenced to 35 years in jail for inflicting the injuries upon then 42-year-old cyclist Andy Hines and leaving the scene of the crash. Mr. Hines did not survive the incident, and DeRice pleaded guilty on Tuesday. The incident occurred in Corpus Christi, Texas. DeRice had two prior felony convictions, so three strikes and he's out. I hope he never gets out. So on to better and more interesting things. This week, we visit with my friend and East Coast Greenway Alliance fellow board member, Eric Weiss. Eric left the Greenway as an employee and took on the role of full-time event manager for the New England Builders Ball. This year, for the first time, the ball comes to Boston, and Eric and I discuss the exhibitors, of which I am one, the venue, which is really cool and interesting, the sponsors, and more. After our break, I spend the rest of the show with coach, trainer, and author Jacques DeVore. You might remember my conversation with Denise Mueller, who broke the land speed record at the Bonneville Salt Flats last year, while Jacques is the man who coached and trained her. His new book, published by Rodale, is titled Maximum Overload for Cyclists, and our conversation is an in-depth look at strength, weight, speed, and endurance from a perspective that you may not have considered. So here we go, off to Boston to speak with the New England Builder Balls manager, Eric Weiss. Hi, Eric. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist. And how's the Builder's Ball coming along?
Oh, Diane, I couldn't be more excited about how the Builder's Ball is coming along for this year. It's our seventh year, and for the first time, we're putting the show in Boston, which is really huge for us. It's our seventh edition, started out in 2011 in Providence. And the first 5 years we did it in Providence, skipping from one site to another, always in a distinctive location. So it's really fun to be there and not like a sterile exhibit hall type environment, creating a sort of a gala feeling or sort of like feeling like a gallery opening. But it was time for this show to go to the next level. And for this region of the country, that means Boston. And thanks to one of our exhibitors, Marty at Geek House Bikes, he connected me with the events manager at the building called the Innovation and Design Building in Boston's Seaport District, which is where the Boston Design Center is. They have these enormous event spaces there that are anything but convention center sterility. And, you know, no drop ceilings, no fluorescent lighting, no constant humming of HVAC. And it's really wonderful. And I could not be more excited for the 35 exhibitors that are coming and the approximately 2,000 or so people that will walk through during the course of the day on September 23rd.
Well, Diane has to be honest and say in the shameless self-promotion department, we will be there. And I'm very excited because I've been to Boston to see one of our suppliers, Seven Cycles, and I've been to visit. I did see the aquarium, but I really haven't spent a lot of time in Boston. And Brian and I are both really excited about coming for the show. Let's move on a little bit and talk about who will be there and then who some of the sponsors are. So beside me, the outspoken cyclist, who else is going to be there?
Oh, it's such a wonderful collection of exhibitors this year. And I think one of the reasons it's blown up a little bit for this year is not just because it's moved to Boston, but because the event is separating itself from the cyclocross festival that it's always been allied with. So it's seen as less of an event for builders of cyclocross bikes, and the percentage of the crowd that is athletes is going to be less. It'll be a much more equitable cross-section of bicyclists and lovers of bicycles. International frame builders like Richard Sachs and Peter Weigel will be there, and some of the sort of, let's say, the new generation of bike builders like Brian Chapman, who builds amazing touring bikes and randonneuring bikes, among other things, and Chris Henry of 44 Bikes, who is, I think it's fair to say, in the vanguard of mountain bike building on the Eastern Seaboard. He's based in New Hampshire. And to my surprise, we actually have as many builders coming from New York City as we do from Metro Boston. So coming up from New York, we've got, let's see what I can do off the top of my head here. We've got Johnny Coast coming, Porter Cycles from Brooklyn.
Sweet Tooth?
Yes, that's right. Sweet Tooth as well.
I'm cheating because I have the list in front of me.
You're much more prepared for this interview than I am, which is great. I'm really excited that C4 is going to be there. He makes one at a time carbon components.
Yeah, look at that.
Carbon cranks and radical handlebars for track cyclists. And it's going to be really cool. And for the first time, we have a velomobile maker coming as well. And that's Better Bike of Massachusetts. They have a product called the Pebble, which is P-E-B-L. And they do the whole thing there. It's they build these cowlings from hemp. So it's sort of like fiberglass, but made with hemp. And it's a three-wheel semi-recumbent underneath that shell with an electric assist. It's a bike that could, four seasons of the year, help a person out with their grocery shopping as well as getting to work or getting to school. So it's really cool to, for the first time, have this amazing broad, diverse collection of makers who are building bikes for athletes and for commuters and for tourists and for people who love randonneuring and outdoor riding and people who are racing cross or road or track, mountain biking. I mean, it's just terrific, and I can't wait to walk the aisles.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Eric Weiss. He is the director of the show, the New England Builders Ball, the 2017 edition, which will be held in Boston at the Innovation and Design Building. And I want to ask you a couple of questions about the building itself, the space that we will be occupying for the show. It looks like a gorgeous building and sort of as artistic as the stuff that's going to be in it. What else is being done at this design center? What is it about? What is it meant to do?
Well, that's a really, really good question because there's some history there. The building was put up by the U.S. Navy around World War One.
Wow.
And it is about a third of a mile long. It's just this immense building. You know, you could fill a dozen battleships with the amount of cement it took to create this building. And I've heard a couple different stories of why in particular it was built, for making rope or for making anchor chains, or I don't even know what. But it's been turned by the city of Boston into this incredible incubator. So part of the building is the design center, which is full of retail spaces for people who are making furniture and selling rugs and all sorts of things. It's really wonderful. But Sam Adams has their corporate headquarters in there as well. And apparently Reebok is going to be moving their headquarters, their North American headquarters, at least in there is what I think they told me. And of course, with so many people working there, there are these food kiosks built in. And what they've done is they've carved out shipping containers to become food vendor, like little shoplets, and also taken some other shipping containers and installed bike parking racks inside. So you've got covered bike parking. Inside the building itself, there are hundreds of spaces of bike parking. And they've even, to cap it off, to make it the most bike-friendly building in the city, as far as I can tell, the staircases to get from street level up to the first floor, the exterior staircases, have runnels for, in the ramps, have runnels for your wheels so you don't even have to pick up your bike so you get it up the steps.
Wow.
It's really marvelous.
It's beautiful. I mean, I'm kind of looking at all of the stuff, you know, having a computer right in front of me all the time. Well, let's get back to our Builder's Ball. That's really what we're talking about. But I think people might be excited if you haven't been to Boston and haven't been to the Design Center, or have been to Boston and haven't been to the Design Center. I think that unto itself might be another reason to go. So let's talk a little bit about your sponsors. You have a sort of an overarching sponsor, Super Pedestrian. I think they're the ones who make the Copenhagen wheel, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Super Pedestrian is the company that makes the Copenhagen wheel, which is such an incredible invention. And their headquarters is in Cambridge, Mass., right across the Charles River from Boston. And they'll be there with a booth upstairs at the show, but also demoing outside. So you can sign up to take a wheel out. And, you know, it's this pedal assist electric bike wheel. And the great thing about it, or one of the great things, is that you don't have to invest in the whole bike the way most electric bike manufacturers run it. You can just buy a wheel and then swap it out from one bike to another. And it's an amazing invention. You know, it recaptures energy the way a hybrid or electric car does. It recaptures energy while you're braking. You can change how much of an assist it gives you via Bluetooth from the app that you're running on your phone. So you can tell it to give you just a little bit of boost, 5 or 10%. Or maybe you've got a really big hill and it's been a really long day and you need that like 50 or 60% boost to get you home. And they're actually assembling these in Massachusetts, which is spectacular because, you know, we as Americans, we grumble and gnash our teeth about how manufacturing has disappeared. Here we have this world-class product and some of the components are manufactured in the U.S. and then the whole thing is assembled in the U.S., there in Massachusetts, but the headquarters in Cambridge. And I couldn't be prouder that our number one sponsor for the event is doing such great stuff.
Well, and then Shimano's a big sponsor. You have a beer sponsor.
That's right. So I'm happy to welcome Shimano back. And they've been such a wonderfully reliable supporter of this event for years. And then our new beer sponsor this year is Harpoon, which makes so much sense for a couple of reasons, one being Boston-based. In fact, their principal brewery is only about 150 yards away from the Boston Design Center. So if you're on an upper floor, you can see the building. You can see their brewery. And here in this part of the country, there's no brewery that supports bicycling more obviously than Harpoon.
Well, I want to talk before we fill in some of the details on dates and that kind of thing. I want to talk a little bit about the reason for the show, besides highlighting all these wonderful builders and all these wonderful products. I'm partial to the East Coast Greenway, especially being an advisory board member. Mass Bike, Richard Fries and I have spoken numerous times. And I want to know, and I want the listeners to understand, what happens to the proceeds of this show and what's going, where it's all going to go?
Well, thanks for bringing that up, Diane. So the history of the show is some years ago, I guess in 2010 or maybe early 2011, I was hanging out with some bikey friends and complaining about how NABS, the North American Handmade Bike Show, never makes it up to New England.
Which, of course, now it's going to come to the East Coast, just to make you right. wrong
it'll,
this year.
It'll be in Hartford in 2018, which is great. And one of the people there, when I was whining about it, was Richard Fries, who you just mentioned. And he said, Eric, don't whine about it. Do something. Make your own hand-built bike show. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? But then I thought about it. And I had a couple of conversations with a couple of builders, frame builders that I know, and thought about it some more, and put together in that first year in 2011 a show that was free for exhibitors to participate in and free for attendees. And then following that, it became a fundraiser for my then employer, the East Coast Greenway Alliance. So every penny over expenses went to the East Coast Greenway Alliance for years. I am now a member, as you are, of the East Coast Greenway Alliance Advisory Board. I moved away from staff. So I'm not doing the work for the ball on company time anymore. So in past years, 100% of proceeds above expenses went to charity, the East Coast Greenway. This year, we've got three charities, the East Coast Greenway Alliance, Mass Bike, and the Boston Cyclists Union. And I have goals for how much I want, how big a check I want to send to each of the three of them. I'm a little nervous because I haven't done the show in Boston before. It's higher expenses, but hopefully much higher return on investment. And we'll see what happens.
Well, I know that the proceeds of beer sales, for example, Harpoon has generously said they're going to do their proceeds as a donation. Yes.
Right. So they're giving me a very good price on beer and then also making a cash donation. And that will very much help with keeping the event in the black.
Right. Exactly. Well, I'm very excited to come, as you know, and we're in booth 33, if I am not mistaken.
That's right. You're in a pretty sweet corner.
Because I'm just such a sweet girl, right?
Well, it's a pretty... That corner of the room is a good microcosm of the kind of diversity of exhibitors at the show. So there's going to be a radical, like, downhill-style mountain bike maker in that corner. That's Hood Bicycles from Cape Cod. And a fellow who makes track bikes in Brooklyn, right next to him. And then next to you is going to be this artist, Doug Dale, a former road racer, raced with the Raleigh team in the 1970s, and now he does collage art, and it's so good. And he's done the poster for a tour of the Battenkill a couple times, so people would recognize his art. And then from Cape May, New Jersey, it's Woody Bicycle, is going to be right across from you. And he makes wooden frames, and they're so beautiful. So people are going to get down to your corner and just sort of turn around in circles with their jaws dropped. I'm so excited.
I hope people who do attend stop by all of the booths. And
oh, certainly.
And if you hear what's going on this show, on the Outspoken Cyclist show, stop by the booth and say hello to us. We actually are going to have a little camera there. We're going to be doing some vignettes of people coming to the show. And also of some of the builders, and we'll be sort of podcasting as we go along, probably on Instagram and on Twitter. So that's going to be fun, and I can't wait to get there. It's only a month away, or a little over a month. So let's tell people again where it is, when it is, and how they can find out more about it.
Thank you, Diane. It's New England Builders Ball, Saturday, September 23rd, from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m., at the Boston Design Center in Boston's Seaport District. And you can learn more about the Builders Ball at the website, which is newenglandbuildersball.com, or just look us up on Facebook or Instagram. On Instagram, it's at Builders Ball. And there's also so much great, so many great bike photos to scroll through as you look through the Instagram account. And I hope to see a lot of your listeners there.
Yeah, me too.
There is a reasonable entry fee and a very small entry fee for youth and free for under 12. So bring the kids.
Absolutely. And so if you didn't catch it, it's a one-day only event from 2 to 10 p.m. So you got to get yourself there. And is there a capacity that the show can hold? And I have an interesting story to relay. You need to know how many people can be in that room at any one time. I'm sure the fire marshals. I'm sure the fire marshals will get in your face.
Yeah, I'm sure the fire department knows, and I'm sure that the building's engineers know, and I'm sure that they'll tell me. And I'll have my volunteers there with the clicker counting how many people have come in and.
And how many go back out? So here's a real quick story.
Too.
And I don't remember what year it was. I was at NABS and the fire department did shut it down. Too many people in the hall. They waited till people came out and then opened it back up again.
Mm.
You know, get there early or get there late, you know, avoid, just get there. Well, Eric, thanks so much. I'll be excited to see you again. I haven't seen you since Philly Bike Expo.
Yeah.
We will mention, of course, the show again on the show, getting a little bit closer, but I'm really excited. I can't wait to see it.
I'm excited to see you in Boston, Diane.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Eric Weiss joined me from his office in Boston. I'm really looking forward to being up there in September. I hope if you are in the area and you stop by the Builders Ball, you'll also stop by Booth 33 and say hello. Maybe we'll do a little video and you can wave and say hi. We need to take a break. And then we'll be back to speak with trainer and coach Jacques DeVore. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back, and it's off to California to speak with trainer and coach Jacques DeVore. Hi, Jacques. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it is my pleasure. We're going to talk about your new book, Bicycling Magazine's Maximum Overload for Cyclists. It's a really fascinating concept in training, and I really want to delve into it. But tell us a little bit about your background and your basic work first.
Yeah, I've been a strength coach for close to 20 years, and I have a center in Santa Barbara that actually I'm not involved in it on a day-to-day basis anymore. But that's been up there for about 16 years. We train mainly athletes. I was an athlete myself. I started in the gym at a very young age as a wrestler. Wrestled in high school and college, ran cross country, played lacrosse, did a lot of martial arts. And then as I got older, I had knee issues, and I started cycling in my 30s, and then started racing, then started coaching, and then started really trying to figure out how, as I got older, I could improve my performance on the bike through what I knew in the weight room.
Wow, that was pretty succinct. I like it. That was great.
I can go into a lot more detail.
We will.
If you'd like, but I try to keep it as short and brief as I can for you.
No, not really. We have time. We can delve into this. So let's begin with the basic premise of your book. So the book is titled Maximum Overload for Cyclists. And you say that endurance is not necessarily improved by some of what I would consider time-honored modalities like just ride long in the small chain ring and don't do any weight training. You'll get over-muscled. Talk about maximum sustainable power, why we want it, and why what we've been thinking is incorrect.
Sure. I don't think I said that, I don't want to be misunderstood, that you don't get endurance improvement by riding the bike. You do. The bike is the sport. But what I do believe is that you can add a lot of value to your cycling that you do on the bike and also improve at a much greater rate by adding weights to the equation. Because when you think about riding a bike, and I tell people, whether you have a power meter or not, you're constantly searching for optimum power, or in the book, I call it maximum sustainable power. And I'll give you an example of that. You're climbing up a hill with a group of other people. They're stronger than you. And what are you doing? First, you're saying, okay, I'm going to try this gear for a while. Oh, crap, I'm falling back. Okay, let me try a smaller gear. And then you start spinning. Here's what you're doing. When you go for the smaller gear and you increase the pedal cadence, you're increasing the velocity, which is a component of power. So now you're trying to figure out, can I improve my power output by increasing velocity? And you may try that. And then you say, oh, that's not working, so let me go to a bigger gear and stand up out of the saddle and see if I can keep up. Then you're increasing force because you're saying, okay, with the bigger gear, there's more torque on the pedals and on the chain. So you're trying to increase now force production. And when you look at the equation for power, which is in the book, it says force times velocity, or force times distance divided by time, which is velocity. So you do it naturally all the time on the bike. You're constantly trying to find the optimum or maximum sustainable power when you're in a long climb. You're picking a gear. So you're saying, hey, this is my gear that allows me, based on my training and background and my body, to produce the fastest time I can get. And Strava is giving people the ability to compare it to other people. So you're seeing a lot of people now recording what that time looks like. But the poor man's power meter is time and distance. So if you say, I do hill repeats to this mailbox, and normally they take me 30 seconds, and then the next time I do it at 25 seconds. If all else is equal, you weigh the same, the bike weighs the same, everything else, you had to produce more power on the bike to get up the hill 5 seconds faster. So power is a big component, and everybody uses it. I did a lecture to a group of cyclists recently. I asked how many of them had power meters, and it was about 25 people I was talking to at the time. About half the room raised their hands. And then I followed with the question, how many of you know what are the components and how do they calculate that number for power? How do you calculate the number? Nobody knew.
Right.
Nobody knew. Well, it shows 100 watts. Well, what does that mean? So if you're sprinting at 1,000 watts, what is that? No one knew.
That's interesting.
So what you find is that most people confuse strength and power. And when you say that if you're a triathlete or if you're a cyclist and you want to improve your times, it's not the fastest sprinter. It's who can hold the highest percentage of their fastest sprint the longest. That's what wins a triathlon. Very rarely do triathlons finish in a sprint. So it's average power output over a long period of time on the bike, in a bike race. And so I said to myself, why do we train in the gym so wrong if sustainable power is the key to riding faster over distance? Why aren't we looking at how to create a power and strength program in the gym that would improve your ability to do that? So that's the premise of the book. And maximum overload, the term is, hey, listen, I want you to get heavier on the, so it's a great way of saying we want to get heavier on the weights, because what you said earlier about being bulky, by getting, everyone believes that if I lift heavy, I'll get big. That's usually the prevailing wisdom. But strength comes in a number of different packages. When you look at a bodybuilder and most people, and if you look at the Western world, U.S. especially, most of our gym work was based on bodybuilding. Right. That's why everyone has that myth. It wasn't based on powerlifting or Olympic lifting. CrossFit did a good job of bringing the barbell back into the gym. You remember the Nautilus machines back in the 70s and 80s, and everything went selectorized where you can put a pin in a plate and you're locked into a position. And everybody says, well, that's not good because it's not functional. And now we're coming back to the barbell. Well, the Eastern Bloc was doing a lot of the stuff that CrossFit, what we're doing, which is considered innovative today, in the 60s. So we're just coming back, I think, to understanding better strength and power and getting away from the bodybuilding mythology that has kind of been prevalent in the gym world as in the U.S.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Jack DeVore. He is a strength trainer and a coach. His new book is Maximum Overload for Cyclists. It is a Rodale Press publication, comes out of Bicycling Magazine. So I wanted to ask you about muscle imbalance. So I think all of us experience it, but don't know that where you are experiencing it. And how important is balance, muscle balance, in terms of not only cycling, but just everyday living?
Sure. I tell people that there's a choreography that takes place that you're unaware of. There's an orchestra and a dance that's taking place within your body in terms of the muscles. And the technical term is proprioception. If you have an injury, the first thing the physical therapist does is try to get the muscles to start firing again. Because of the injury, in many cases, you'll have a severe muscle imbalance. One muscle's been injured, so it's not firing well at all. And you have a number of other muscles that are picking up the load. So they need to first get you to allow that muscle to start to fire again. So when you reach out, if you're just standing up and you reach your hand out in front of you, there's a balance of muscles that are being engaged. First, you have to have mobility to extend your arm out. So everybody thinks that way. They think, well, I got to move my arm out, so I'm using my bicep or tricep to extend my arm. My bicep holds it, the arm up. My shoulder helps to hold it up. If you're lifting overhead, same thing. Everyone will say, well, what muscle are you using? I'm using your shoulder. But what you don't realize is the weight of your arm has to be stabilized by your core. Your chest is going to be involved. Your lats are going to be involved. All of those, that's the choreography of the muscles that I mentioned earlier. It's the play between stability and mobility and what we call, people will call the negative load on the muscle, the eccentric load and the concentric load, which is the movement side of the muscle. Those are working in tandem. So when you have an imbalance, and I said this in the book, I said that for those of you who may not know who Mark Cavendish is, he is one of the best sprinters in the world. He was in the tour, and there was a big controversy in this last tour because he got knocked out in a crash. But he's one of the best sprinters in the world. And I said I could beat Mark Cavendish in a sprint every single time if he took his hands off the handlebars.
That's not fair, so, Jacques.
It's not fair, but that's the example of what you're talking about. The minute you reach for those handlebars and grip the handlebars, there is a balance of muscles at play. Your grip strength, forearm, working up the arm to your shoulder, your lats, your core, and then finally to the pedal. If any part of that kinetic chain has an imbalance where, just look at it this way, If you had crashed and you had hurt your hand and you can't grip the handlebar as strong, there's an imbalance there because now you can't grip the bar hard enough to manage the force from your legs pushing into the pedals. So your sprint and power would diminish. So muscle imbalance, and in the book I talk about a self-assessment. I talk about looking at, you know, your core strength and upper body strength, specifically to try to balance out any problems that you may have that may be reducing the amount of power that you're producing because of an imbalance. So what typically is the end product of an imbalance is less power output.
Really interesting, which is going to take me, what you just said is going to lead me right into the next question. I think many of our listeners, as am I, are older. We're seniors or becoming seniors. And so there is danger of both osteoporosis and osteopenia right now. And I'm wondering how important strength training and what the regimen of a strength training program will do to either offset it or help improve it or even maybe dissipate some of the effects of these bone problems?
Sure. First of all, if all you do is cycle or swim, there's no impact. Running has impact. so it thickens bones. You have to have that ballistic impact. The landing and the running thickens the bones, not only in your legs, but your spine all the way. All that impact, you have that jarring forces your body to load the bones. And but if you're swimming, you're weightless in the pool. If you're biking, there's no real impact. You're spinning a pedal. And what happens through sweat and breathing, you lose tons of calcium. And there's a lot of master cyclists that are riding, you know, 20 to 30 hours a week, and they're in their 40s or 50s, and they have bones like an 80-year-old. If they crash on the bike, they fold up like a hanger. It's really, really unfortunate. And the doctors will recommend, hey, listen, the sport that you've chosen, sitting on a seat and pedaling, doesn't do much for your bones. In fact, it diminishes the bone density. So we want to offset that. In addition, in the book, you'll see where I had a photo of John Howard, who's one of the most prolific U.S. cyclists that we've ever produced. He's done pretty much everything on a bike, and he's 68 years old. But you get a lot of what you asked earlier about muscle imbalances. If you're just doing a cyclic sport, and I call it horribly fit, there's a lot of people I know that can go out and ride 100 miles, but if you ask them to do anything else, they're incapable of it in many cases because they don't have the mobility. They can get their foot over the top two of the bike, clip into the bike, and then they can ride like a crazy person. But then when you say, hey, listen, let's just run across the street, it's problematic. So if you're saying as you're getting older that you're no longer a professional cyclist and you want to just have better health, then being in the gym will really, really support cycling well. So it helps you if you do have a crash, the bone density. So the weightlifting helps on all of that. And in the book, we talk about, you know, as you progress with proper progression and form, getting the heavier weight on the bar. There's also a value hormonally in terms of as you do more anaerobic types of work and then high intensity, short intervals or power work where you're doing jumps and the like, you produce more testosterone, more exercise-induced growth hormone. So there's a hormonal response that also helps. And the best defense against all disease is carrying more lean body mass. So in many cases, you'll see cyclists from the waist down, they look like Adonis. From the waist up, it looks like they've been in a POW camp. And so it's not the most healthy build for longevity. I think that if you're saying, I want to ride as fast or faster, be healthier, then the book supports that on both fronts. It'll make you faster and it'll make you healthier, which is ultimately what I do for my clients. Other than the professionals that I work with that, you know, this is what they do for a living, or, you know, an 18-year-old coming up through the ranks of cycling, or even someone in their 20s that wants to become a professional, that's a little different story. But for everybody else, health is paramount. And if you can feel better in your overall movements throughout the day and off the bike, then that's what I want to give you as well in the book.
Let me remind our listeners once again, we're speaking with Jacques DeVore. He is a coach and strength trainer. The book is Maximum Overload for Cyclists. I want to move on to diet. And I think that diet, of course, has to go hand in hand with everything else you do. You are not necessarily a believer in a low or no fat diet. Tell us your basic take on diet and food.
Yeah, I wrote a blog a while back that said if everything we knew about nutrition and exercise today was wrong, how would we eat and exercise? Because 30 years ago, it was much different than what the medical community is saying we should do now. So I like to say that there are some basic tenets of health that you want to pay attention to. And so when I look at diet, the first thing I say to people is, they'll say, well, Jacques, what do you call your diet? I said, I call it a real food diet. I go, if you eat real food, and in my case, I try to eat organic protein sources wherever possible, tons of colors, fruits seasonally, and good natural fats. That doesn't mean that I'm afraid of saturated fat either, because if you look at all the research coming out now, fats have gotten a bad rap for a long time. So no, I'm not a no-fat, low-fat guy. In fact, what people will do is there's a lot of regulatory hormones that go with having fat in the diet that get disrupted when people eliminate fat completely, leptin and ghrelin and some of the other things that are hormonally balanced in people that have a good body weight become skewed with people as they get heavier and heavier. So I'm a real food guy. And so, and that usually throws me into the category of what a lot of people would consider more paleo or primal eating. Now, I'm not saying that I have to get up with the dawn, go barefoot, and sleep when the sun comes down type of paleo. But what I say is you need to find something that's sustainable for you. And the other thing is we're nutritional coaches for performance with our clients. But I tell every client that comes through the door, it's an experiment of one. Everybody's different. Everybody stores fat differently. Everybody metabolizes calories differently. Everybody will respond to different diets better. So what you need to do is find what works for you. And a lot of people come to me and say, Jacques, I eat really clean. You know, I eat really well. And I said, yeah, you may, but it may not be right for you. So you really want to think about that when you're looking at your own diet and say, okay, that's why we have clients do a food journal, get an idea of sleep relative to food, performance relative to food, body composition relative to food. I mean, in the book, I talk about a self-assessment and developing baselines. If I had a client walk in here and she was an 80-year-old woman, I said, why don't we try a 400-pound bench press and see how that works?
Yeah, let's do that.
And you would go, what are you, crazy?
Right.
But when it comes to food, that's what people do.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I'm a yoga teacher, and I always talk to my students about checking heart rate and sleep and all the things that affect them on a day-to-day basis. And everybody knows that you know, my diet is similar to what you're suggesting. So it's just interesting that people sort of go with fads and instead of looking at what they need for themselves.
And especially cyclists, here's the real problem, and I see it. We'll end a ride at the coffee shop. And in the book, I heard this term that a wife of a cyclist called mammals, middle-aged men in Lycra.
Right.
That was the acronym. And she said, there's a bunch of these mammals around, and they shouldn't be in Lycra. That's what she was joking about. And the problem, a lot of them is they finish the ride with a really sugary coffee drink, and a scone. Now, it may satisfy the need for replacing glycogen because you've just done an 80-mile ride, but at the same time, it may not promote good health. So you want to be careful. A lot of people say, well, I earned it or I burned that calories off and I don't know why I'm not losing weight or my body comp's not coming down. It's because whatever environment they've created for their body is not the right one for them.
So here's an interesting point, which I didn't realize. You're the guy with Denise Mueller.
Exactly.
Okay, so Denise was on the show not too long ago. She blew me away. She's really an interesting woman.
Wonderful.
And John Howard and I have known each other for 40 years. So it's just, it's a small circle, isn't it? This bike
circle.
Place.
Yep.
Let me ask you about training being different for men and for women. So I know, you know, there are differences, obviously, but besides just physiological differences, there are also the emotional, the mental, the hormonal, all of that.
100%.
What do you do to assess a woman maybe differently from the way you assess a man and then work on the training program? What would we look for?
Well, you're 100% correct. I mean, when I started a program, a 30-minute workout up in Santa Barbara at my gym up there years ago because I had read a case study on Curves, which is a woman-only gym, and I looked at the workout from a strength coach perspective, and I go, wow, this isn't really that good. It's better than nothing, but I said that, you know, I think I could really improve on something like this, and I put together a 30-minute workout. We coached the women on diet, everything else, and it was very successful, and they're still doing it up there. We do it here, but we add men as well. And there's a big difference. And the one thing that I learned, first of all, is what you mentioned earlier, is the emotional aspect. Women are just, first of all, more emotional and intuitive of their body and how it impacts their life. If I ask a woman to fill out a food journal, she'll be very diligent about it because the social pressure of being a woman is so much different than a man. You know, the hardest guys to get the people to get to eat right are men, that they have the easiest path to weight loss and body comp change because we carry more muscle, we have testosterone. But I'll ask them to fill out a food journal. They'll go, Jacques, forget about that. I'm not doing that stupid stuff. And women will be much more diligent about it. So first of all, you have to recognize from my first eval all the way to the, I really have a lot of empathy for what women and how women are, you know, seen and what they have to grow up with from being young to being older and dealing with body image. So you have to start from there first. Body image is an issue. And in my promotional material, I have an article written by a woman, and I'll happy to send it to you because you'll appreciate it. And she said, toned is muscle. Just call it for its effing name. Now, if I put on my marketing material, attention women, come in and train, and I'm going to add a lot of muscle.
Yeah, that's not what we want to hear.
Exactly. But if I said, we'll get you toned, toned is muscle.
Right.
You have to, and you have to quit being afraid. And CrossFit's done a good job at that in terms of getting women more comfortable with being in a gym and, you know, mixing up with the men and all of that. And so I think that that's one of the biggest issues is you have to be careful. And then the other thing is the great thing about what I do is I'm in a power to weight sport, cycling, running. Most of these sports, unless they're really short sprinters, are power to weight sports. So you don't want to add size. If you talk about a crazy group of people about food and body image, cycling is one of the only places where if you're amongst a bunch of cyclists as a man and you say, wow, you look like you lost some weight, they go, oh, really? Oh, that's fantastic. Whereas if you're in a normal gym and you say that to a guy, they go, oh, God, really? Am I getting skinny? Because I don't want to be skinny. I want to get bigger, you know? So it's kind of funny amongst cyclists because the men are very conscious of their weight, too. And you do have eating disorders with the men.
That's
you can
interesting.
Have that, with cyclists because it's such a driven by power to weight. So because it's a power to weight sport, this is what we talked about earlier about, you know, putting on size by weightlifting. Strength comes from really two sides of the coin, what they call neural drive, which is the neuromuscular response from your brain overcoming a particular movement pattern. And you hear the myths about, you know, some tiny little lady picking up the back end of a Volkswagen to pull a kid out from underneath it in a car accident. And when you use that as a metaphor, whether it's true or not, but there's been some amazing feats of strength. We know that with people under huge duress. What happens is in that moment of stress like that, the body fires because the brain requires it to. Huge amounts of muscle fiber that's already there to perform that one feat for that one moment. Never be able to do it again unless you were thrown into that environment. What we do in a controlled environment in training in the weight room is something similar. We want to overload the muscles so that there's a neuromuscular response and it fires muscle that's already there. That way, you're not adding hypertrophy, which is adding more muscle fibers or enlarging the size of the muscle, which is what bodybuilders do. And the problem with most women is, and I have it all the time, they'll, in a passive-aggressive way, try to manage the workout. They'll do a particular exercise, and they can do it 15 times in a row. I said, okay, I'm going to add 5 pounds. Oh, no, I can't do any more. I go, wait, you just did 15 pounds with, you know, 50 pounds on the bar. I'm just going to add 5 more. No. It's just going to be too heavy. And because they're afraid of the heavy weight. So their belief is that if I stay down in that 15 rep range and lift light, I'm going to stay smaller. But ask any bodybuilder how you get big, and he's going to go, I'm going to be 12 to 20 rep range. I'm going to have a couple minutes rest, and I'm going to do as much volume as I possibly can, and that's how I'm going to get bigger. So in many cases, the myths have driven the workout so that women will get bigger because they don't want to lift heavy. Once a woman figures it out, it says, hey, you know, lifting heavy is actually reducing my size because it's giving me the proper hormonal response. The best example I can give you of that hormonal response are women 100-meter sprinters at a world class. If you watch the Olympics, the last Olympics, and you watch the 100-meter sprinter women, and you look at them at the start, I trained Tori Edwards years ago, and if you look at their upper bodies, and you go, oh, my God, look at how muscular and ripped and toned they are. They must do a lot of weightlifting on their upper body. Hardly any. But what it is because they're doing so much sprinting, which is an anaerobic exercise, there's a production of hormones that produces lean body mass, not just from the waist down, but throughout their entire body. So any bodybuilder will tell you that if you do a lot of volume in your lower body, your upper body is going to respond and get bigger because the hormones don't stop at your waist. They impact your entire body. So what we try to do is lift heavy, get a proper hormonal response, get a really good neuromuscular firing, so we're not adding any size, and then you can produce more force, which eventually translates into what I talked about earlier, more power.
So I want to talk about rest and sleep and how important rest is to the success of your training programs.
Right. Huge.
Well, one word answer is not good enough. You got to give me more.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to give you more. There's two types of fatigue. There's what they call peripheral fatigue, which is you do an exercise and the muscle tires. You feel it immediately. And then you have what they call central nervous system fatigue, which is the stress from a really heavy weightlifting session. It doesn't seem like you're that tired, but then you just sleep like a baby that night. Stress in your job will give you huge amounts of central nervous system fatigue, stress in your life. So you want to pay attention to that. And what they're doing now is they're really monitoring sleep patterns well, heart rate better, and you can get a better handle on, you know, where you are from a central nervous system. But the best example of central nervous system fatigue is when you wake up in the morning, you have a ride scheduled for that morning, and you go, oh, my God, I'm so tired. And you slept 12 hours. That's central nervous system fatigue. That means it's the difference between overreaching and overtraining. You want to overreach, which is you want to challenge your body and get overloads like we talk about in the book. But you don't want to overtrain where you just keep digging yourself into a deeper, deeper hole. And cyclists have a tendency to do that. So rest is of great importance. And the other great metaphor is if you think about rest in a micro version. Let's just say I have you doing some dumbbell curls, and I'll give you a 25-pound dumbbell, and you can do 12 in a row. Now, if I keep saying go longer without any rest, how many are you going to be able to do? Not many more. But if I give you a rest, then you'll be able to do another 12 in a row. And if I give you a rest, you'll be able to do another 12 in a row. You have to look at your overall training the same way as that set. If you don't have the rest, you won't be able to get the next 12 reps in a row. So the rest is important. Nutrition is important. All of those I throw under the umbrella of regeneration, massage, you know, any type of therapy that you do, myofascial release, yoga, a vinyasa yoga class. It's a meditative class. You know, we sleep so our brains can recover. And our bodies have a great defense mechanism against finally forcing sleep if you don't get it on your own. It'll force you to sleep because our bodies are really clever about stopping us from killing ourselves. That's what we're doing.
Usually.
And if you think about it, theoretically, if I got on an exercise bike or on my trainer, I should be able to ride forever if I can just keep feeding myself. But it never works that way. Body's smart. And one time I did the 12 hours of Big Bear. It's a 12-hour mountain bike race, an ultra-endurance race. And what I found was my body was trying to stop me from eating. I couldn't hold the food down. I would keep eating, and I couldn't really swallow that well. It was really hard to get food down. And then if I ate it too fast, I'd throw it up. And so my body was saying, nope, I'm not going to let you exercise anymore. I'm just going to stop giving you fuel. So body's clever, and it will force the regeneration if you don't try to plan it. And the best way to do it is through a design, looking at your food and performance, looking at your sleep and performance, looking at your training days looking at your cycling and taking all these factors into account. So you're 100%, it's the flip side of everything that you do in fitness.
What an interesting conversation. Let me remind our listeners one more time. We actually may, Jacques, we may be able to get this all on this week. I might just go ahead and just do it that way. I mean, it's recorded, so I can cut out the conversation I started to have about putting just part of this on the podcast. I think it's too important, and I'd like everybody to hear it.
Thank you.
So I want to remind our listeners, we've been speaking with Jacques DeVore. He is the author of Maximum Overload for Cyclists, along with Roy Wallach. Tell us a little bit about Roy. Who is he and how is he involved in this?
I met Roy when he was working on a book for Mark Sisson called Primal Endurance. And I have a chapter that I put in there, was kind of the early stages of discussing the Maximum Overload program and Maximum Sustainable Power, because I was working with a cyclist we mentioned in the book named Dave Zabriskie, who was a 7-time national time trial champion and rode in the Tour de France, and I was coaching him in the gym and on the bike at that time. So I met Roy through that, and he was a writer for the L.A. Times. He contributes an ongoing fitness column to the L.A. Times. He's written a couple of books on cycling. He's a madman when it comes to fitness and exercise. He'll try anything, and it's amazing his life, because he's been able to do so much in fitness and write about it. It's just it's a wonderful life. So we met, and he contributed that book, and then he came to me and he said, "Hey, Jacques, I think there's a book here. I think you should really expand on it." And I'd written blogs for about 6 or 7 years, a lot of it on this concept, and had done all of the scientific research, and you know, had really refined what I was doing, and then used it with Zabriskie early on in his cycling his last season, and then with a number of other cyclists. And so he said, you know, would you be interested in doing the book? And that's how I came about Roy. But he's still writing a lot, and he's an excellent writer, and the book wouldn't be what it is without his writing skill. I write like a scientist. You know, it's kind of like Dragnet, just the facts, man.
Right, exactly.
He's a wonderful storyteller,
Well, the book is interesting. It does have a lot of weight training and other kind of training information. You do give a series of exercises, core strength exercises. I really appreciate you taking so much time to talk with me today. One more time, Maximum Overload for Cyclists. It's a bicycling magazine publication. Jacques DeVore. You can get it at Rodale Press. You can get it at Amazon, I'm sure, and everywhere else. The name of your organization is Titans and Sirens, which is kind of interesting.
Sirens and Titans Fitness in Los Angeles.
I had that backwards. In Los Angeles. Oh, you are in L.A. Okay. Well,
yeah, I am in L.A.
And I wish you a lot of luck with the book. Thank you so much for writing it, and thank you so much for talking with me for such a nice, lengthy conversation today.
Thanks, Diane. I really appreciate the time. Great questions. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good afternoon.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. I really enjoyed that conversation. I learned a lot. I hope you found it interesting. Jacques DeVore's website, Sirens and Titans, can be found online, of course. And the book, Maximum Overload for Cyclists, is a Rodale publication. You can pick it up at any of your local bookstores if you're interested, order it from the Big A, or however else you usually get your reading material. That's our show for this week. I also want to thank Eric Weiss for being on the show and for reminding us about how much fun the Builder's Ball is going to be. Again, it's next month, September 23rd. At the Innovation and Design Center in Boston. It's only a one-day show, 2 to 10 p.m. I hope if you have a chance and you're interested in custom bikes and lots of stuff that goes along with it, you'll stop by and say hello. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. We hope you enjoyed this one. And remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.